and bonjour to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. I'm Kate Borsay, and alongside me in the studio, it's a brand new hello to a defender who's played for Chelsea, Arsenal, over in America at Sky Blue, and for Rosengard in Sweden, and for England, and now back at Chelsea. Phew, it's Anita Asante. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
It's awesome to have you on, and you have the experience and the insight that makes you a perfect fit for this podcast. I'm impressed so far, and I'm sure you will be, listeners. And we welcome back to the studio, fresh from another trip to France, reporting for World Soccer Magazine, the iNewspaper, Take a Breath, Kate, the Sunday Times, and I learnt today is the holder of a UEFA B licence. It's Glenn Moore.
Hello.
You're a man of many talents, Glenn. Anita, we must ask you very quickly. You've been out in France. I know you watched the England-Scotland game. You are an England veteran yourself, 70 caps. I'm allowed to say that, aren't I? Finalist at the Euros in 2009, quarter-finalist at the Women's World Cup in 2011. So no better qualification, really, for someone to tell me how you think this England side are getting on.
Yeah, so far so good. You know, two wins. Of course, we are their harshest critics, so we always want more from them. But I think against Scotland, especially the first half, they played really well. And of course, you know, they knew it was going to be a tough game. You're playing another home nation, you know. So it was tough for them the second half. But I think progressively they're getting stronger. The second game, they were much better. They used the width and created really good chances. And I think you can see that we have a squad with lots of depth, lots of versatility, and so many players that can step up and produce good performances.
Does it excite you to see this new gen England? Because it's a very different brand of football, I suppose, without kind of harking too much back to the good old days and everything else. But it is a different brand of football now. It is a different setup. It's a lot better backed by our national association.
Yeah, absolutely. I think now having full-time players makes a huge difference to the quality that we're now starting to see. I think there's a bit more of a patience and understanding in the way England play. You know, not everything is in transition all the time. We want to keep the ball more, and we are making better decisions when it comes to building up into attacks and building out from the back. And that's great for this England squad.
Glenn, you've just come back from Le Havre, the game against Argentina for England. Just a brief word on that one from you.
I was encouraged by the way they stayed patient and composed. It was very similar to the New Zealand game, the warm-up game, when England lost 1-0 in Brighton and then started to panic a bit as the game went on and end up slinging in 30, 40-yard crosses that gave very little chance. This time, I thought, apart from a short period just before half-time when they started a little bit nervy, I think Jay Moore got unnecessary booking, that frustration started creeping. The second half, they came out and again, they stuck to passing the ball, moving it around, trying to stretch the defence, trying to create an opening. You could say they did score on transition as it happened when Argentina were pushed forward. But, I mean, speaking to them afterwards, they had a feeling that the goal would come rather than thinking, will it come?
OK, well, let's digest tonight's action alphabetically. We've got some great games to tuck into, actually. Four in total. Let's go Group A first, though, and a little bit of drama.
La grande concentration de Windy Renard. Qui va manquer son pénalty. Alors est-ce qu'elle l'a touché du bout des gants avec l'aide de son poteau, la jeune gardienne nigériane.
Qu'est-ce qu'il y a à retirer apparemment. Elle va lui donner un carton.
Elle va retirer 8 fois un pénalty. Et celui-ci, elle va le réussir, Wendy Renard.
Well, France with a 1-0 win over Nigeria, and that means the hosts have three wins out of three in the group stages for the first time in their history. But the game, not without controversy. Nigeria held the opposition well before a red card, a pen, in fact, make that two pens, produced a 1-0 win for the hosts. So let's talk about the penalty, first of all. Anita, was it a pen?
Yeah, I think upon review, it was a clear foul in the box. Although she was really attempting to go for the ball, she unfortunately took her down.
Events surrounding that then, Eugenie Le Sommer flicked it into the path of Vivian Essaye, who goes over under apparent contract from Ngozi and Mbere. A real game changer there, and with it, a second yellow for Mbere and a dismissal, a red card. So the penalty, first of all, was taken by Wendy Renard.
Presumably because Eugenie Le Sommer had only just come on,
yeah.
I suppose, because she took the penalty very successfully in the first game. And Wendy, with her standard relaxed sort of way of wandering up to the ball, hit the outside of the post and put it wide.
So a miss for her, but that wasn't the end of it, as we've hinted, because when is encroaching not encroaching and when will it be penalised? Glenn, just explain what happened.
Well, first VAR came into play looking at the goalkeeper, who was fractionally off the line with the left foot, with the right foot as well for the line, but you have to keep one foot on the line these days with the new rules. VAR showed that her left foot was just a bit off the line. Would never been seen in the old days. It wasn't like wildly off the line. Anyway, so another penalty. This time Wendy scores and it's a goal and nobody thinks to pick up on the encroachment on the other side of the box. The attackers running in and some defenders encroaching into the area. If they're going to be that strict on encroaching on the goal line for the goalkeeper, it should be just as strict on attackers running in and looking for the rebounds and so on. And then it should have been retaken.
So Glenn's bemused. Anita, you too?
Yeah, absolutely. As a defender, of course, I feel that the advantage obviously has gone towards the attacking play. But I think if you're going to look at both incidences, then it is both breaking the laws of the game. So, you know, we need clarification here. You know, what are they prioritizing, or does it bounce, yes. Does it cancel each other out?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you retake again or do you give an indirect free kick in the box?
So, look, a mighty mess, really, I think, with this. But the goal stood and France 1-0 winners. It did take them, though, an hour to get a shot on target. How are Nigeria able to keep them quiet for so long, Anita?
I actually think it's testament to Denaby and his organisation of the team. And I've played in Sweden. I know they're really good at keeping organisation as a priority in most teams. So I thought they were compact in the midfield and the back line, tried to work their distances well and funnel France out to wide areas. And of course, we know France is strong in those areas anyway, but they were able to defend well in their box and just reduce them to crossing situations.
So Nigeria benefiting from a Swedish coach then in the form of Thomas Denaby. Glenn, for you, Nigeria could get even better.
Well, you look at quite a few teams in the tournament and Nigeria would be a very good case in point. If they had the sort of resources and backing that RFA now gives the England team, you just think how good they will be. Given how good they are with a limited amount of games, very few warm-up camps. I mean, this Nigerian team, they won the African Nations Cup in 2016. They didn't play at all in 2017, which may or may not have been because they went on strike and kept the trophy hostage in 2016 because they hadn't received their bonuses. So basically, they just get the team together. And this also applies a lot in South America for big tournaments. There doesn't seem to be any programme of friendlies and so on. It's like, okay, we've got a tournament coming up. Let's get the gang together, try and throw our squad together and see how we get on.
We hear it so many times during this World Cup. What about France, though, Anita? Has opinions shifted? I know that you're in France to watch the France-Norway game, which France won, but, you know, looked a little shaky there. Has your opinion changed on France and how far they might go in this tournament?
No, I guess I think as long as they're winning, they're still building confidence. And you can see that they, you know, I think they believe in themselves in the way they play and they're consistent with it. They don't really detract from their playing style and their what they set out to do. I think, of course, for them to keep progressing when they meet other high-ranked teams like the USA, they got to be more clinical in and around the box and take their chances. That's really going to be the telling point, I think, for them.
But they've got such an awesome attacking lineup. We saw Cascarino today, Valerie Gauvin as well. What about defensively, as a defender when you're watching them? Any weak points there?
Yeah, of course. I think obviously we've seen in the previous games unforced errors and against a better side who maybe they would capitalise on that and that could spell some trouble for the French side. I think, you know, they're used to maybe not being as tested as much either. A lot of teams aren't high pressing them necessarily. They're sitting off. And I think once they meet a team that's probably gets more in their face and gets high on them, you're going to see that they get a bit shaky and a bit nervy with communication between the back line and the goalkeeper as well.
Yeah, most of the back four play for Lyon and Lyon aren't put under pressure very often.
No. And the French being the French, love it when things are going well, but may get rattled when things aren't going so well, right? They have a huge belief in themselves, as does their coach, Karine Diacre. Okay, well, that's things wrapped up in Rennes. Now over to Reims. It's all the R's today. As Norway played South Korea, 2-1 winners Norway in this one. But that doesn't tell the real story at all. Angry Ingrid Engen, well, wasn't quite in the end. But Norway scored two penalties to see them through in second place to the knockout stages. But they were forced to defend throughout the match as South Korea put up a good fight. But ultimately, it wasn't enough. The penalties came from Caroline Graham Hansen and Isabel Holofsen. Anita, Chelsea teammate on both sides of this fixture. So what was your assessment?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great competitive game to see. But as you saw, Norway had the clinical factor, producing chances and getting themselves into a position where, of course, they won a penalty, but they put themselves in that position to
But
to
was
win.
It more about Norway doing that or about the errors from the South Korean side?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. I think Korea didn't really start the tournament very well. They had a point to prove. They needed to produce a better performance today, and they did that, but it's a little bit too late, I think. And the chances, they obviously, looking at the stats, they created a lot of opportunities on goal, but the conversion rate was very low. So the quality is probably missing in their final third, as well as the errors that they're making at the back.
Well, it was a much better game for them, as you mentioned, 22 shots, 6 on target. But overall, it has been a disappointing tournament for them, not a single point. But a highlight for you from them, Glenn, was their goal.
It was. It's probably the cleverest goal I think we've seen in the tournament so far. A lovely little cheeky backheel nutmeg by Lee, which went through to Yeo, who scored under a lot of pressure from Miura, who's probably quite pleased she did score because she tried to pull her back with her arm. And had it not been scored, that was pretty clearly a penalty and a red card for denying a goal scoring opportunity, you know, deliberately trying to deny it. So, and then she would have missed the next stage.
And it's a shame that South Korea left it until this game, really, when it was going to be tough for them to get anything from it because of the strength of that group. What's happened to that side? I mean, G, as a teammate of yours at Chelsea, has it been frustrating for you to watch how perhaps she hasn't had the service, has she?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I get to witness the quality of G week in, week out. And I know she is a class player, and I wanted her to be able to show that.
And also she did as well, I'm sure, wanted to show this.
Of course, at this level. And I think, you know, not getting off to a good start, not getting enough quality passes into their midfield, the most effective playmakers, obviously has reduced the opportunity to progress in this tournament. And I'm sure she'll be disappointed, and they'll look, you know, they'll reflect on this later on. But yeah, it's disappointing because I think ultimately we all expected a lot more from South Korea.
Also Cho, the captain, meant to be marshalling from midfield, and I didn't, you know, see any leadership, see anything really coming from that, you know, particular area.
To win football matches, the centre of the park is probably one of the most important areas of the pitch to dominate in a game and stamp your authority and show that you mean business, especially when your back's against the wall and you need to find a way back into a game, claw yourself back in. You need someone to step up. You need more than one player to do that. And it didn't really happen visibly. We couldn't see it. I'm sure, you know, internally, maybe it was there and they felt that they were, but we didn't see that extra level of push and energy, I think, to get them back in it.
So what does South Korea need to do after this tournament? Go away and assess the way they're being coached, go away and assess their training methods. What might they highlight as areas to look at?
They could probably do more players playing overseas. Almost all the squad playing in the Korean League.
I know that Claire Rafferty told me that, maybe it was Jilly, told me that she's a huge advocate for South Korean players and is always suggesting to Emma Hayes, what about this one? What about this one? What about this one?
Well, Emma's been out there. I don't think she's going to be signing anymore.
It is a tricky situation, and also for G as well, who's, you know, obviously really proud advocate of her country.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a combination, really. Like you say, those players maybe need to play abroad in a more competitive leagues, but at the same time, language barrier for a lot of players is a reason they don't move around to leave their home nation.
It's a long way. It's difficult. I mean, obviously you've moved, and obviously America, they speak English. I mean, Sweden, I guess you must have learned a bit of Swedish. They speak pretty good English here.
Do you?
Yes.
This is very impressive. I can't even test you, I'm afraid. I know Swedish. Lots of French.
Yeah, I could say that.
Exactly.
Really.
Let's look at that Norway side. Caroline Graham Hansen scored the first pen, won the second one, but couldn't continue her part in the game, so she couldn't take it because of an injury that she picked up in that foul. Post-match, though, Graham Hansen saying that her left ankle's sore and the team will have it checked out, but she said what hurt even more was being on the bench and not being able to help her team for the final 35 minutes. What a star! Lovely words from Graham Hansen there, who must be annoyed.
She'd be, if she's not fit, she'd be a big loss to them.
Yes,
they've
a huge
already
loss.
Got the player who cannot be named not playing. So to lose two of them would be very bad.
She certainly is the player who can't be named. Anita, Norway encouraging in their first two group games, but their goals today were the result of errors by South Korea. How far do you see this team going? Because I think I was really positive about them, and I'm not sure after today.
Yeah, again, I think they're also struggling to really create clear-cut opportunities, especially from open play. And I'm sure that's something they're going to have to look back on when they do their analysis of how they can improve and where they can create more and get more numbers in the attacking third. But I think collectively they're quite solid. I mean, they understand their roles and they work well as a team. So that's a great plus for them. But again, yeah, they're going to need to do more just to know that they can really take control of the game and create something for themselves.
I think they'd be hard. They're hard to beat. I mean, France were lucky to beat them, really. Got a very fortunate penalty. And whilst they don't score many
French
goals...
French penalties? Fortunate? Anyway.
Sacre bleu.
We get your point, though. We must move on and sum up the group. So that means that France top Group A on 9 points. They face one of the best third-place teams in the round of 16. That could even be Scotland, by the way, if they make it through. Not very hopeful faces here in the studio. Norway finish in second on 6 points. A tricky tie against Australia, Italy or Brazil awaits them. So tough one next. Nigeria with 3 points. They need to wait to have their fate decided. South Korea bottom with no points. Up next, let's talk Group B. Donc laisse-moi te chanter. Well, it's time to look at the earlier kickoffs now, and Spain drawing 0-0 against China. A pretty frustrating match to watch, to say the least. But Spain have reached the knockout stages of the Women's World Cup for the first time ever. That 0-0 draw with China securing them second place in Group B. A cagey and uncreative game. Spain with the most possession. Couldn't do anything with their chances, though. China also through to the last 16, by the way, by virtue of their 4 points and third-placed finish. Not the most electric of games then, Glenn.
No, I think China had worked out in advance that 4 points would probably be enough. So as long as they defended well and didn't concede a goal, they'd be quite happy with that. And they looked quite pleased at the end.
Anita, this is a shocking allegation. Glenn is saying that China pretty much threw this. Correct?
Yeah, pretty much, I guess.
Oh, what?
Well, they play for a draw. You throw it, you lose.
Yes, yeah. Okay. But this happens, right? And do we think this is fair enough from the China side?
Yeah, I mean, I guess sometimes teams go in with a tactical idea of how to just make sure they get through, basically. And they probably would have been aware of Spain's threats and not wanting to play too expansive and too open football. So that's one reason they might have just decided to be disciplined in the performance and secure a point.
Also, I mean, Spain were trying to win, so it was a game. It wasn't like...
Because Spain didn't have any option but to try and win, right? Because...
Well, a draw suited Spain as well. But in fact, it didn't make much difference to Spain. A draw, they come second. A win, they come second.
Yeah, exactly.
So they might as well try and win.
Plus, it's not like the Spanish to sit back and defend.
No, it isn't.
You know, they want to attack. They are... That's their whole style of play, I think.
So China happy to stay in third because second in the group most likely faces USA. That's tough, right?
Yeah, I mean...
poor Spain, but not poor Spain because they've done well, but that is a fixture you would not be looking forward to.
Well, no, especially when you look at the USA and their results and the chances they're creating, the goals they're scoring... They're going to be super confident going into this next match, I think.
But the USA are the best team in the world and it'll be a great exhibition to be a part of. And who knows, maybe Spain can produce something. Also something worth noting that the USA games are so well attended. We heard from Tom Garry last night out there for the BBC and he said, look, after the host nation, after France, FIFA posted tickets to America more than any other country. So there was a huge pickup of tickets over in America for the game. So it's going to be a great game. It just, you know, depends whether it's going to end Spain's World Cup right there. Let's get the Spanish opinion on this from Spanish women's football journalist Bea Redondo. Bea, Spain through to the knockout stages of the tournament for the first time ever. What's the reaction been like?
Actually, there's been quite a lot of excitement around, you know, being able to make it out of the group stage for the first time. I think there's been a lot of frustration too for the lack of a goal, because there was a big question around this game. Do you go out and try and win it? Or do you go out and sort of give it away so that you avoid the US in the round of 16? I think this was something that journalists were talking about, people, you know, fans were talking about too. And we could clearly see that Spain went for it with the attacking-minded kind of starting 11 that Jorge Vilda put out. But the lack of goal is something that's been a little bit worrying, considering that you went out to win it and you came out with a 0-0.
And the post-match reaction over in France, what's that been like with all the post-match press conferences and interviews?
Definitely, there's been, you know, some happiness around the fact that it's the first time that Spain qualifies. I think that's definitely the key takeaway, because we need to realize how far this team has come. It's only the second time they're in a World Cup. So this has been like something that obviously we're really excited about. There's been a lot of worry, as we mentioned, about the attack. Bilda has been talking after the match about the fact that China is probably the best team when it comes to defense, when it comes to closing down a team and not allowing any attack to go through. So he was definitely reassuring it. Kind of trying to make everyone aware that, you know, this has happened, but we're working towards, you know, creating more chances and just scoring goals, which is what everyone realises that we need to do.
Thanks very much to Spanish women's football journalist there, Bea Redondo. Let's look at China then. Wang Shuang and Wang Shangshang subbed off early into the second half. Both players on a yellow, so it could have been about protecting them. But overall, China's strike force, have they been disappointing? Just one shot, none on target for China in this game.
Well, Wang Shangshang should have had a red card for her foul that she got a yellow card for. So she was lucky to stay on the pitch that long. A lack of red cards, you could say, for some tackles in this tournament.
Yeah, it has been inconsistent, hasn't it? Because there was that high kick as well, wasn't there, that went with a yellow and it definitely should have been a red on Jackie Gronin. All right, so notable performance from the China keeper, though. Peng Shimeng clattered into her goal right at the end of the game. She's going to feel that tomorrow. She made 9 saves in this one, Glenn.
Yeah, she did well. And it was interesting that last moment, I think they'd already used 3 substitutes. So it was a case of, could she carry on? But it wasn't a head injury. So she bravely soldiered on and just kept that last few minutes. But she had a good game.
We need to see more from China, though, Anita, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And I think at least they're showing that they are quite solid or difficult to break down, and teams aren't going to score many goals past them. So for them, they need to obviously just keep developing their attacking game, getting more quality of shots on goal, on target, basically, and work their game from there.
They're one of those teams that are starting to fall away. I mean, they're not as good this time as they were 4 years ago.
No.
Of course, they used to be better. They used to be one of the strongest teams in women's football.
Let's move on to the other game of the day now. Germany running out 4-0 winners against South Africa. Germany then safely through as Group B winners. It could have been more for them, but Germany had 2 goals ruled out for offside. And Dlamini made some excellent saves in the second half for South Africa. South Africa exit their first Women's World Cup with 3 defeats out of 3, so no points for them. Germany largely untroubled in this one. They've now extended their unbeaten group stage run to 19 matches. They were up against their weakest opposition today, but some highlights for you from Germany, Glenn.
Again, they scored goals. That will always give them confidence. I thought they did play with much more flow about them than the first 2 games, when they struggled really to break down defences. They didn't have that much difficulty breaking down South Africa. Helped a little bit by the defending and a goalkeeper error early on. They confirmed they're very good at set pieces, which we know, but that's clearly in working order. Very powerful in the air. They will certainly trouble some teams that come up against like that.
So good to see some goals from the Germans. But their defence, Anita, how did you rate that?
Again, I mean, it was a better performance, but I definitely see some weaknesses. And I think if other teams can capitalise on the distances between the centre-backs, especially when the full-backs are so high and encountering that space, it could spell some trouble for them. That's one of the things they struggled with in the first game. And the opposition managed to, you know, get in between them a couple of times and were just lacking some quality in the box. So I think that's, you know, food for thought for the other teams that will meet Germany.
And players that stood out for you today, Glenn?
I thought Sarja Brits looked very lively through most of the game, scored, I think, one of the goals.
Poor ball, but it's going to be a tap-in! 2-0! Sarah Dabritz, after a horrible mistake by Dlamini.
Yep, Melanie Leupold scored the first goal on 14 minutes.
Corner Alemania, la frontal, y el gol. Goal, 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 goal! De Melanie Leupold.
Sarah Dabritz followed that up on the 29th minute. Before half-time, Alexandra Popp popped up with her first goal in France. Oh, that's an awful, awful joke.
It's looking for Popp. There it is! We've been waiting, Alexandra Popp!
Apologies, and Lena McGill.
Headed towards the back post area. The header and another save off the post. The finish from McGill. Right place, right time.
On 58 minutes.
And the right back, the young 19-year-old Grimm, also looks a good player.
Giulia Gwyn. So she got the goal in the first game, and you like the look of her as well.
Looks a good player, yeah. Germany are still producing plenty of good young players.
And for you, Anita?
Yeah, I agree with all of those players. I think were standouts today. And Huth, also on the right side, I thought was influential in this game. And obviously now they're really starting to utilise the strengths of their squad.
South Africa have that wonderful Catlana goal against Spain to show for their efforts, but sadly not much else. Can you rate their showing at the tournament, Anita?
Difficult. You know, it's a first. Did you say it was a first tournament for them? So, you know, at least now they'll go back with experience of this and they can develop from here on out. But again, you know, it's tough for some of these African nations. They don't have the same backing and support, investment. So, you know, it's telling when you see the performance is a lack of opportunities, goal scoring opportunities especially, and some of the errors in the goalkeeping defending. But I think they will definitely improve, hopefully, if they get the opportunity again. And it's nice to have a team like that in this competition because they continue to show spirit, passion, work hard throughout the game, no matter the result.
We should say this is only Spain's second Women's World Cup and Italy's second one for quite a long time. So there's some hope to be had here for these debut teams.
I think so far they've played 9, lost 9, which obviously doesn't look a great record on the face of it. But merely qualifying for a lot of countries has led to improvements at home. Jamaica, South Africa, there's been more investment in the domestic games. You know, and you could say, I mean, South Africa particularly, I mean, they were lucky against Spain. I wouldn't say they've been hammered by anybody. They've not been disgraced. They played quite well in most of their games.
So here's the situation with Group B. Germany up top with 3 wins out of 3. And we'll wait to see who of the third place teams they face. Spain finished second just ahead on goal difference with that potential meeting, probable meeting, with the USA. And China in third. And there's a small chance that they might meet England next. A small chance, but there is a chance there. It's the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition with myself, Kate Borsay, and here in the studio today, just to remind you, it is Chelsea defender Anita Asante and women's football journalist Glenn Moore. Well, it's time to get a Lionesses update now. Reporting for TalkSport, Faye Carruthers is in Nice, the Riviera, the sunshine. I've seen pictures of her in sunglasses walking along the seafront. You know, you have to remember this is near to Cannes, near to Monaco. It's French glamour at its best. So what have you been up to, Faye?
I did laundry with the lovely Lindsay Hooper yesterday. That's as exciting as it gets out here.
That is so funny because I have also done laundry with Lindsay Hooper. And we spent some enjoyable time in Canada doing laundry together. And there is no better laundry partner than Lindsay Hooper, might I add. Because
no,
she's bound to keep
there
you
isn't.
Entertained through all 5 hours of the various washing cycles and drying cycles.
Wow, we're exciting, aren't we?
Oh, I tell you, you are. And I hear a little ping pong tournament sprung up amongst the media.
Yes, well, Dan Kilpatrick was from the Evening Standard, was looking for somebody to play ping pong with. And I ably put my hand up and said, I like a bit of ping pong. He's a bit of a shark. Got a wicked backhand, but, you know, I owned him. And luckily, Rich Laverty took that video just as I got the winning point and he netted. So, you know, I look like a pro.
So how long is this tournament going on for? And is there a leaderboard? Is there sufficient amounts of competitiveness?
It just started today. And then apparently, so I then went because I had a hit for Talk Sport. So I had to disappear after I'd had my win. And then it got very competitive by all accounts from what I saw on Twitter afterwards. So yes, this may be resumed if we can find a table tennis table at every place we go to from now.
Before this all happened, of course, you spoke to some of the Lionesses. So tell us who you spoke to and some of the key lines.
So I had a lovely chat, first of all, with Rachel Daly of the Houston Dash. She talked about the fact that when she came into the squad, she spoke to Phil Neville and said to him that she didn't just want to be, you know, the player that fills in for other people as a backup in all different positions. She wanted more of a stable role. That's not happened so far this tournament. She only made her first appearance the other night as a substitute.
And what about Abby McManus? Obviously, she started, didn't she, against Argentina. How's she getting on?
Oh, she was such good fun. I had such a lovely chat with her. She's got such an interesting story as well, really grounded. You know, her family are a massive football fan. She's obviously just signed for Manchester United, which is her team.
Yeah.
And she said it's been really tough pretending to be a blue for all these years, having been at Manchester City for 12 years. She said that Casey Stoney's been texting her and giving her advice. We talked about her not seeing football as being a job for her in the past. You know, she worked at a butcher's part-time when she didn't have a professional contract, and she was desperate.
I love that. She actually worked at a butcher's. So
she did. Yeah, she did.
We should totally call her a chopper or something, shouldn't we?
Yeah, she needs a different a new nickname, I think.
Thank you very much there to Faye Carruthers out reporting in Nice for TalkSport. Glenn, we must get an England media WhatsApp group update from you, because there are how many journalists on this WhatsApp group?
It's about 50. It pings over and over again if you don't forget to mute it.
And what is the latest from this? Because we're always fascinated, because we feel a little disconnected here, even though we're very much a part of the media team, Anita. We feel a little disconnected, yeah, exactly, because we don't get to go out there. So
well, what's
the latest revelation?
This morning, teacher, Miss Louise Taylor of The Guardian, organised two minibuses from her hotel, the Mercure, to take all the children, this is how they describe themselves, I should point out to England's training camp, which is actually quite a long way from Nice.
So Louise Taylor of The Guardian is basically organising the transport for those journalists who are too young / too lazy to do it themselves.
Well, she came up with a very good idea. They were looking at hiring cars. They were checking out Uber. They were looking at all sorts of possibilities. Trains. Richard Lafferty is very good on trains. obviously, they haven't got Sophie there, who's the expert on cheap
travel. Sophie Lawson. Well, yes, but she doesn't always get it right from the hotel reviews
That's true.
I've seen she's been looking at recently.
And then when they came back, there was a WhatsApp post from Luke Edwards at Telegraph asking if anyone had found a laundrette. So hopefully Faye pointed him in the right direction.
Absolutely. Did that WhatsApp group tell you that Tony Duggan's back in training and likely to start against Japan?
Yes, that did also emerge. Yes,
okay.
So Tony's very pleased apparently.
Great. All right, so let's head into tomorrow's games. It's a straight race for second spot in Group C, with a good chance of whoever misses out still getting through by virtue of that third place qualification. Anyone bored of that third place qualification yet? Because it's enough to mess your head up, let me tell you, after watching every single game of this World Cup. Italy are already through. Brazil and Australia both on 3 points. Jamaica languishing behind with no points. I was going to go on to Brazil taking on Italy first, but Glenn, this group is a massive headache, and I'm going to get you to explain why.
Deep breath. If Italy lose heavily to Brazil and then Australia beat Jamaica, then all three teams will have 6 points. So then it becomes, as far as I understand it, a little mini league to forget the results against Jamaica. It's just results between those three teams. So Italy could, in theory, still come third. They will qualify, that's guaranteed.
So it doesn't go on goal difference?
It would be, but it'd be goal difference between those three teams.
Right.
So it's like a head-to-head between three sides.
Oh, well, this could be exciting, Anita.
So it could be quite interesting.
And it may well be what finishes me off during this World Cup. Because I do understand. I hope we don't get into that situation. In fact, I do, because it sounds exciting. All right, so team news before we get into the match. Formiga's out injured and suspended anyway. Marta had this to say ahead of the game. Formiga is an irreplaceable player. Fortunately, Vidal has already announced Andrashina as Formiga's replacement tomorrow, so not so irreplaceable. Sara Gamma, the Italy captain, after being on the receiving end of a high foot from Jamaica, says, as long as my other body parts are doing well and can help me play, I'm happy. I'll go to the dentist when I get home from the World Cup. Great one, sorry, Gamma. Thank you. So Italy, we know that they're through, Glenn, correct?
Yes.
But their unbeaten run will arguably face their biggest test yet in Brazil.
You'd have thought so. But Italy are full of confidence. I mean, the funny thing is, a draw might suit both sides. Although Italy-Brazil has a great win to it, I mean, it may not be as exciting a game as we would hope.
Brazil know that they need to pick up points here in Nice. So with Australia expected to win against Jamaica, how do you think this side are going to do?
I think it could be a tight game, to be honest. And knowing the Brazilians and the Brazilian players I've played with, they're not going to want to take the foot off the pedal. You know, they're very attacking-minded type players, and they're going to want to take the game to Italy. But yeah, again, this is the group to watch. And, you know, like you said, I'm getting head loss as well, just trying to figure it all out.
My brain's just, lucky we have Glenn Moore here, I tell you. Anita, you played with Marta at Rosengard, didn't you?
Yeah.
Just tell us a little bit about her.
The player you see on the pitch is the same player you see off the pitch. So much verve and passion. She's an exciting player when you watch her. She's the type of player that does show leadership through her playing style on the pitch, and all the other players bounce off of that energy. Of course, not having Formiga in the side, I think players are going to look to players like Marta and Cristiani to lead from the front.
But they were both subbed off at half time, weren't they, in the last game? So are they going to be, was that with this game in mind? Do we think we're going to see them start in this game?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure the coach felt that he could afford to rest them from the last game, give them a bit more extra recovery time so that they're fresher going into this game, and presumably because they want to go out there and win. So, you know, of course, that's what they're going to be seeking to achieve from this game. But Italy, you know, I don't think everyone expected Italy to have done as well as they have. So they can't be complacent. They can't underestimate them as an opposition.
I was going to say, what was Marta like to play against in training?
Oh, yeah. You know, she's the sort of player you hate to go 1v1 against. You know, even as a defender, but
you're doing it every week rather than just twice a season if you're playing with her.
Yeah, of course. Training. I mean, as a player, it's amazing because you feel like you're getting tested. This is what you want to do. You want to challenge yourself against the best so that you can improve and develop. And she's not the type of player that's going to let you rest. She's going to make it as difficult as possible. And she's very good at going 1v1. So I hope that we get to see that in this upcoming game.
But presumably the coach doesn't want you to kick it in training either.
Well, you know.
I was going to ask that, actually. Were you advised not to go in too heavy on Marta, honestly?
No, we never had that, to be honest. They never told us to not do that. I think those of us that are experienced try to be more mindful about not taking out our teammates because they are important players for the team, and collectively we want to win and we need those players to
yeah,
do that.
Sure.
So I think in training, you know, you obviously have to find the right balance of testing each other, but also not hurting and injuring each other.
Some nice tales there about Marta. Thank you, Anita. All right, let's head on to Australia and Jamaica. All but the most unlikely result will confirm the Reggae Girls' a last place finish, while Australia harbouring knockout ambitions after their thrilling victory over Brazil. Well, Australia will want to win this one, Glenn. Good old Aussie pride at stake, but a draw will do. They fought back, didn't they, from 2-0 down to beat Brazil in that awesome 3-2 game. Does that mean that that result, not against the odds, but from going 2-0 down, and what an eventful game that was, does that mean that they'll head into this one with lots of confidence?
Oh, having finally hit their straps, as they like to say, I think they'll be...
I think
they'll be buzzing. I mean, to win 3-2 when you've been losing 2-0, every team will take that as a huge sort of lift.
And will they have some fun against Jamaica, do you think, Australia? I'm not saying that Jamaica are everyone's whipping boys, but what I'm saying is if you're Australia and you're high on confidence and you've had the nation biting at your heels, you know, the Australians were very critical after Australia's first loss. Is this a chance for them to say, we're here, we've arrived, and this is what we can do?
Yeah, basically, I think they're going to want to show their media back home, look, we came here with great tournament ambitions and we're going to prove that to you and show you for you guys to get on board and support us, which they should be doing anyway. So, you know, like we saw from Kerr in her response in the last game.
Suck on it, mate.
Exactly. That's the sort of attitude I think we expect to see going into this Jamaica game.
There's by the way. Even T-shirts with that on it, yeah. Any way back for Jamaica, Anita?
Well, I think they showed great character and spirit in their last games, you know, despite the defeat. They're the type of team that are going to keep playing to the last whistle. So I think they're going to want to at least perform to the best of their abilities and not make it easy for Australia to create chances and get goals. And I think they can be very proud of what they've tried to achieve this tournament as a first time, you know, debutant as well. But yeah, you know, of course it's going to be tough, but I think they'll give it their best shot.
Australia aren't very quick at the back if Shaw gets a run at them.
Those two centre-backs are slow, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And so if they can get the service to Khadija Shaw, it'd be interesting to see.
Anyone with potential that we haven't seen for Australia yet, Glenn? If the game's wrapped up in the later stages, any gems for Ante Milicic to unearth?
Well, it'd be interesting to see if he plays Mary Fowler, who played against England at Craven Cottage, well, back in about October when she was 15. She's now 16. There is an argument you take young players like that to a World Cup just to get them a feel of it around the camp. But then again, you know, why not throw her in if they're 3-0 up?
And that's a player that trained with you at Chelsea for a couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I really was impressed, actually, when I saw her and she trained with
us. It was her and her sister.
Her and her sister. And, you know, we were all very like, wow, like this girl can hold her own against some really top quality players in our squad. So I think there's, you know, she's one to watch, and it's going to be exciting to see, you know, her future with the national team and beyond.
Yes. She had about 15 minutes against England. She didn't look out of place.
No, she's certainly got a great eye for goal. Well, here are the permutations. Brazil and Australia both need just a draw from their third matches to guarantee qualification. Having lost their two opening matches, Jamaica must beat Australia and look to overhaul their vastly inferior goal difference before then hoping results elsewhere fall their way. OK, it's unlikely. Reminder that Italy have already qualified. All right, well, just before we go, it's time for our predictions competition. Just two matches to look at in the crystal ball now. Australia versus Jamaica. Anita, for you.
I'm going to have to go with Australia on this one. But
scoreline?
2-0.
2-0, OK. Glenn?
Yeah, I think Australia will win relatively comfortably. I can't go 2-0, can I, if you've done it? I'm going to go for 3-1.
OK, and Brazil versus Italy, Anita?
Oh, that's a tough one, I think. I'm going to go with Brazil 1-0.
Oh, Glenn.
I'm going for Italy 2-1. I've been really impressed with Italy. They're really flying.
OK, well, let's see what happens on Tuesday. Look, it's been a great start to the week. Thank you so much to Glenn Moore and to Anita Asante as well. And I'm sure we'll be seeing you both again very soon. Thanks, guys. You can keep up to date with everything Offside Rule by following us on Instagram and Twitter. It's at Offside Rule Pod. And on our website, you'll find lots of good columns and match reports. Don't forget Carly Telford's column there. And if you search back, you'll find the one that was written shortly after the death of her mum, taking you through all her emotions involved with that one. And it's an incredible read. It certainly is. Also, five things that you might have missed about the second round of group games. Always interesting to check in with. We're at offsiderulepodcast.com. We will speak again tomorrow. Until then, listeners, au revoir.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.